We left off at the bottom of Kuf Mem Vav Amud Bet. There, the Gemara was discussing who's the author of our Mishnah. The author of our Mishnah, because who goes or who focuses on Umdana, right? That we look at the circumstances, we look at the context, and through that, we make a determination. So we had one possibility was Rav Shimon ben Asya, that was Rav Nachman's suggestion. And the other suggestion was Rav Shimon Shizuri, which was Rav Sheshet's suggestion who the authors of our Mishnah are. As we saw in other places, that Rav Shimon ben Asya says that if a person gifts his possessions to someone after he gets news that his son has passed away, and then he finds out that his son has not passed away, Shimon ben Asya says you can reverse the gift, because it was obvious that the gift was only granted because he didn't have a son. And Rav Shimon Zuri discusses a case where the individual says kidvu, write a get for my wife, but does not say the word tnu. Yet we assume that when he meant kidvu, he also meant tnu, to give the get. So now the Gemara wants to know, the third to last line, man, tana hadu tanu rabbanon. Who's the author of this rice that we're about to bring? All right. Shehaya chole umutal b'mita. He was sick on his deathbed. Right, it's your possessions. Who do you want to give them to? Amar lam, dome sheyesh li ben, says that I had a child at one point, and achshav she'en li ben, now that I don't have a child, I mean that at one point I had a child, but this child either passed away or I found out it wasn't my child. Right, and now that I don't have a child, nechsei leploni. Therefore, my possessions should go to so and so. Another case where he was sick, he was on his deathbed. Right, where these possessions should go to whom? My wife at some point was pregnant. It's now that my wife is not pregnant. My possessions should go to so and so. In the end, he finds out that he really does have a son. That which he thought, you know, mean that I thought I had a son, but now I found out I didn't. But then he finds out he really does have a son. Or the same thing, that I thought my wife was pregnant, I found out she wasn't, and then he really finds out that she is pregnant. So, ein matanato matana. His gift is not a gift. So it seems pretty obvious, because he's, you know, he's almost guiding you in that direction, that the reason that he's gifting this property is because the closest relationship, or who he would have otherwise gifted it to, is missing in this place. So when it says, Lamer Rabbi Shimon ben Asya. So let us say that it's Rabbi Shimon ben Asya who gives us a similar case back in the Braisa, or the Tosefta from Ketubot, that when he comes to his son, and he gifts under the assumption, without any explicit statement, that his son had passed away, we find out that his son's alive, we reverse the gift. So too over here, when we find out one of the parties that he thought had passed away is around, and we say the gift's not a gift, and it goes to that party. It says, "Velo." Say that. Let me show him. He velo rabbanon. It says, "Afilu tam rabbanon." Even the rabbanon could accept this tosefta. Why? Because dom is shiny. Dom is different. He's making an explicit statement that I thought I had a child or son. I thought my wife was pregnant. Then he says, "I found out she wasn't." So there, he's almost. It's not that we're implying something from his words. He's explicitly telling us that his intentions lay otherwise. But because he can't fulfill those intentions, therefore he's granting the gift now. So why can't the Rabbanan? The Rabbanan can fit in here. It's explicit. You don't have to any umdana de milsa here. So where it says, uktkarila, maika arila. Where it says, what was the havamina? Why would you have thought that the Rabbanan can't fit in? It's so easy to fit the Rabbanan into this tosefta. Why would you suggest that they couldn't fit into this tosefta? What was the Gemara's havamina to suggest otherwise? It says, while he's lying on his deathbed and he's ill and he's about to pass away, he's remembering all those horrible things that befell him, you know, during his lifetime. Oh, I had a son and I lost my son. My wife was pregnant at one point and then she miscarried. He's just bemoaning, right, everything that happened to him. Not that he's indicating that anything about the gift. He's just going on about his tzaros. And then he talks about the gift. So Kamashwala know that when he speaks about these issues, he's speaking about who his priorities would have been with, or who he would have intended to give the gift to, had it not been the fact that they weren't there. So if we find out that they are there, we will grant them the gift. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav, Minayin lematnot shchiv meira shehi min haTorah. How do we know that the granting of a gift for a shechid mirah is a din min haTorah? So we've learned until now, the underlying assumption is that a matanat shechid mirah is a din de rabbanon. So din de rabbanon, the rabbanon instituted such a din in order to allow people to pass away peacefully. And so they allowed you to grant gifts on your deathbed, even though it doesn't fit into a formal kinyan or a formal, doesn't qualify in, or doesn't fit into the normal classifications of kinyanim. Nevertheless, we allow you to do it and have tokif, that it will have permanent value in the sense that we will listen to what you say and we will do what you say. So here the Gemara is asking, well, how do we know it's min haTorah? So min haTorah, we've only talked about shechid mirah midrabbanan. So Tosfos says over here that the Gemara is simply asking that not min haTorah dafka, but rather where's the asmachta? That nobody really believes that Torah shechid mirah is midrabbanan. This is just they're looking for an asmachta be'alma. So the first one says shenemar va'avartem et achlato dubito yesh lecha avara acheret shehi kazu. It says va'avartem et achlato dubito. We spoke about this in Yesh Nochlim. That a person moves an achla right to his daughter. So you have another havara acheret shehi kazu. We have another havara that moves property. Which is that? Is a zu matnat shchimera. That's the gifting of a shchimera, which moves property away from where it would have otherwise gone into its normal yoshim. It's moved away. He's able to redirect that property through the matnat shchimera. What's the drusha here? What's the drusha? So the are three possibilities about what the drush is. The first possibility is that the Rechenu Chanano explains that the word et is extraneous over here. Vavartem et nachalato. Right? It could have just said vavartem nachalato lubito. So the word et is extraneous. Rishbam says it doesn't seem to make sense here because we're going to see in a second that the Gemara is going to respond and say, well, what are you going to do with Vavartem if you don't learn this drasha? What do you do with it? But the Gemara is clearly learning from the word Vavartem and not from the word et. It's looking for a drasha. And the Gemara also in a second is going to learn a drasha from the word unutatem. So over there it also sounds like they're after the main word and not the et. That's the first possibility. There are others that suggest that the difference over here is, and we saw this in Yesh Nochlim, that all the other yoshim, it says unutatem, unutatem. By the daughter, it says vehavartem. So the changing of the lashon is what generates the limit over here. Why did it change its lashon over here? So that's why we have a limit over here. The third possibility, the Rishbam rejects that as well. And he says, because he says in a second, we're going to say the word netatem is also extraneous. That the word netatem is, so the changing from netatem to vartem should be meaningless because we already know unetatem itself is not necessary. So the Rishbam says, that the words unetatem, vavartem, are miutarim. They were unnecessary. That you don't need those words at all, because you could have just written ish kiamut uveinen lo nachlato devito. That's it. His nachla goes to his daughter. It's very straightforward. You don't need his vavartem unetatem. You just—it's a statement of fact, right? When a person ish kiamut uveinen en lo nachlato devito, his nachla will go to his daughter. So the fact that the word avartem is used here at all is what's unnecessary, and that's what gives us the drasha. Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Barabu Mehoch Unatatem et nachlato le'achiv or le'achav, that you're going to give his possessions to his brother, which is the next, right, in the line of the Yoshim there. Yesh lecha netina acheret shehi kazu. That extraneous word unatatem, according to the Rishbam, comes to teach you there's another netina that works just like Yerusha. Vezuzu, which one is that? Matanat shechid mirah. That's the gifting of a shechid mirah. Will work like a Yerusha to be able to move it. Rav Nachman, my time alone, mar me'avartem. Why doesn't Rav Nachman use the word avartem? Meaning, why doesn't he, if he has the word netatem is extraneous, so is the word avartem. So why doesn't he use that? Ha'umi barleik the Rabbi. He needs that for the drush of Rabbi the Tanya. We've seen this before in Yesh Nochlim. Rabbi Omer, b'chulan ne'emra be'netina. Kanemra havara. All of them say netina. This one says havara. In the chashim avir nachalam yishevet l'shevet elabat. There's only one yoresh that moves property from shevet to shevet. That's the daughter. Ho ubana ubala yoshimota. Because either her son or her husband can, who are possibly from different shevet, can inherit her, and therefore they would move the nachla from shevet to shevet. Rab Zera, my time alone, my unetatem. So why doesn't Rab Zera, why doesn't he learn out unetatem? Well, I mean, if the words are extraneous, then unetatem is also extraneous. says, no, because urchei dekrahu. That's a normal lashon. You have to usually have a verb in the pasuk to describe you had to move the nachla. So the verb nunatatem sounds like the right verb. That's a normal verb to put there. Vavartem already sounds like a verb that shouldn't have been there, and therefore he doesn't want to use nunatatem, but rather vavartem. Rav Nashi bar Yirmiyahu bar Mihocho says that the source is from here. So it says vayamim ahem chalach Hizkiyahu lamut. Right, so he was on his deathbed. Chizkiyahu was about to die. Vayavo elav Yishayahu ben Amoz, a navi. So the navi Yishayahu comes to speak to him about this. Vayomer elav ko amar Hashem. This is what Hashem said. Tzav lebeitcha ki meit ata v'lo techiyah. So he says, start giving out your last will and testament. Give your instructions to your family, because you are going to die and not live. So obviously, Chizkiyahu takes heart to what Yishayahu says. He does tshuva. And he doesn't pass away, but what is Yishayahu saying to him? Saying to him, "B'tzavah ba'alma." Right? He just asked him, give instructions to your family. So if he's telling him to give instructions to his family, it sounds like he can, through just these instructions, he can move his nachla around, he can get the nachla to whoever he wishes. By the way, just to uphold Tosfos' pshat, that the Gemara is saying, "Matanat shchiv mi'ra min haTorah minayin," here the Gemara is bringing a pasuk from Navi to prove it. So it's obvious that the Gemara is not looking for a din d'oraisa. They're just looking for an esmach to show that it works. Otherwise, why would they bring a pasuk for Navi to say, matnat shchimira min haTorah minayin? Right, Rami bar Chezkel Mayocha, it's from here, v'achitofel ra'a kilo nasta etzato. So here it's the case where Achitofel gives advice, he's the advisor to Avshalom in the merit against David. And then Barzillai Giladi is able to convince Avshalom not to listen to Achitofel to help out David. And the question of whether they should pursue David that night or not. Should they wait till the morning or should they pursue them at night? So they have a disagreement between Achitofel and Barzillai Giladi. And Avshalom sides with Barzillai. Achitofel was known to be right all the time. And therefore, he realizes that it's going to be lost now because Avshalom is not willing to listen to him. So he heads home. Chavoshet Chamor takes his donkey. Vayelech El Beito El Iro, heads back home. Vayitzav El Beito, and he goes ahead and gives instructions to his family. Vaychenek, right, and then he dies or whatever. However, he helps himself to die. But Tzavah Ba'alma. He says again, you see over here that before he passed away, he gives instructions to his family, but simply gives instructions. He doesn't hand out gifts. He doesn't do anything with a kinyan. He simply says, here, this to this person, this to this person, and you see that there's again, but not shchimi raz done through its avav yama. Torah banan, shlushat varim tziva Achitofel et banav. Says three things that Achitofel suggested to his sons. Number one, these are all, the Gemara had a, Misora that this was the case. You can't prove it from anything. But out to you be machloket. The first one is don't get involved in machloket, which is not what Achitofel did, right? Achitofel obviously stuck himself in between David and Avshalom. Al timredu be machut be David. Do not rebel against the shalshelet of machut be David, because that will not be successful. The yom tov shalatzeret barur zaruchitim. If Shavuot is a clear day, if the day of Shavuot is a clear day, you should plant wheat. So if you say that it's a clear in a day without any clouds, plant wheat that year, because that's like Etzem HaShemayim LaTohar. That's going to tell you that things are going to work out well. Marzutra Amar Balul Itmar. So Marzutra says, no, it didn't say Barur, he said Balul, a cloudy day. So if it's a cloudy day, then you should plant Chitin. Amrei Naradai, Mishmei de Rabbi Yaakov, lo barur barur mash, lo balul balul mash. Not clear, a really clear day, and not cloudy, a really cloudy day. Afilu balul veruach tzvonit min yishavto. Even if it's a little cloudy, but the northern wind is blowing, clearing the clouds away. Zehu barur. That still classifies as a barur. So now you know nothing, because you have three opinions about what you should do when it's Shavuot. One opinion says that when it's clear day, you plant chitim. The other opinion says when it's a cloudy day, you should plant chitim. Last opinion says, if it's cloudy, but the wind's blowing, it's going to clear the clouds, so it's a partly cloudy day, right, then you should plant chitim. So now that you have all three opinions, you don't know which one is it, right? I mean, we have no conclusion about what you should know from the fact that the day of Shavuot is plant chitim. Amarlei Rabbi Ava Ravashi, Anon, Ad Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimei Matanin Ala. We rely on Rav Yitzchak Because the Amar of Yitzchak Bar Dimi, Motzei Yom Tov Acharon Shel Chag, when it comes to the last day of the Chag, Akol Tufim Lashan Hamaracha, everybody looks at the smoke that's coming up from the Mizbeach to see which way the smoke blows. Because based on which way the smoke blows, then they'll know what to do, they'll know where to plant, or they'll give some understanding of the upcoming year. This is the equivalent of what, you know, would be the farmer's almanac to look it up, all these ideas, or the, what is it, like Hedgehog Day? These ideas that some sort of siman can indicate to you what will be the type or weather for the upcoming year. So, Natak Alfeit Safon, if the smoke went towards the north, Aniyim Smechim, that means that it's a southern wind, then the Aniyim were happy, Ubalabatim Atzavim. And the Balabatim are upset or sad about this, because that means that if it comes from the south, why? Mipnei she gishmei shana mirubim, because it's going to be a very wet season. So it's going to be a very wet year. So perot markivim, those perot that are stored in the storehouses are going to rot because of the moisture, so much moisture, humidity. They're going to rot, so they're going to have to sell out everything in the storehouses. They can't keep it there. So they're going to have to flood the market with what's in the storehouses. And then the good rains will bring in another bumper crop. So prices will drop. So the Aniyim are happy because there's going to be plenty of food and prices will be low. And the Balabatim are upset because their profits are going to be diminished by the fact that there's plentiful produce plus all the otzrot have to be empty. Natak alfei darom, and then if it blew towards the south, meaning a northern wind, aniyim atzavim, right, the atzavim, the poor people were upset, ubale batim smechim, and the farmers or the owners, the property owners were happy, mipnei shegishmei shana muatim, because the rain was limited in that year, upeirot mishtamrim, so that which is in the storehouses will last. That's good. The crops, obviously there will be some rain, but not a lot of rain, and therefore there will be limited produce. If there's a limited produce, then the prices will go up. If the Ashana Maracha went to the east, meaning they have a westerly wind, then everybody is happy, which is the natural wind. The westerlies are the natural wind, right, that blows from west to east, the western winds that come. Whenever a person flies, if they fly from west to east, then it usually takes less time because the winds help them going from the west to east versus the other way around where you're flying into the winds. And I think that has to do with the rotation of the earth, right? Then because of that, the winds face that way. Kalfei Marav, on the other hand, if the Marachash, Isha Maracha went to the west, Hakol Atzavim, everybody was upset, which means that it was an easterly wind. The reason why are everybody upset? The Rashbam claims that everybody was upset because there'd be no rain and it would be a batzoret, and that's why everybody would be upset if it was an easterly wind. Tosus takes issue with that, and he thought that easterly wind over here does not mean that it means mean no rain, but rather means a lot of rain, that there's going to be a ton of rain, and it's going to be so much rain that it's not even going to be good anymore, meaning that it's excessive rain which is going to ruin the crops and it's going to make everything miserable. So the two opinions about why the easterly winds are difficult. Very minu, where it says, is that really true? Very mini. Mizrachit, the lom yafeh. The easterly wind is always good. We just saw now when we saw from Yitzchak Bar Dimei that the easter wind, everybody was happy. Here it says the easterly wind is always good. Maravit, the westerly wind, lolom kasheh, is always bad. And when we brought from Yitzchak Bar Dimei, he said the westerly wind everybody loves. Ruach tzvonit, if you have a northern wind, meaning coming from the north, going to the south, right, yafel chitim, then it's good for wheat. Bisha sheviu shlish. Once they've already grown up to be a third high, v'kashel zeitim, and they're bad for the olives. Bisha shenitzu, I'm sorry, they're bad for the olives when they've just blossomed. V'ruach dromit, and the southerly wind coming up from the south, going to the north, kashel chitim, bisha sheviu shlish, is bad for the wheat once they've reached a shlish. And it's good for the olives at the time that they are blossoming or budding out of the olive trees. So how are we going to reconcile this west and the east? How do you know, what's the siman from this braisa? Shulchan b'tzafon u'menorah b'darom. That the shulchan is in the north and the menorah is in the south. Therefore, the northern wind is good for the wheat. What goes on the Shulchan? The Lechem HaPanim, that which is made from wheat. So the northerly wind is good for the wheat. And the menorah, which is in the south, what's placed in the menorah is the olive oil. So therefore, the winds from the south are positive for the olives. So that's your siman. So, hi, Rabbi Didei, I'm Rabbi Didei. Each one grows what it needs, meaning that the Shulchan and the Tzafon grows what it needs, the wheat. And the menorah in the south, the winds from the south grow the olives, which are what the menorah needs. Lo kasha. So the Gemara says, no kasha between Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi and the Barisa we just brought. Halan, haluhu. That's for them, that's for us. So this halan, haluhu appears a number of times in Shas, appears the Gemara in Kiddushin, the Gemara in Brachos, other places. There, a lot of times, many of the times, there's a machlokes between Rashi and Tosafot. Who is the halan and who is the haluhu? Whose halan and haluhu means those for Bnei Eretz Yisrael, and that's for halan, right, is for those in Bavel, where this is being written, and haluhu for them, which is in Eretz Yisrael. So, which is which, usually is subject to machlokas over here, there is no Rashi, and the Rashbam and the Tosfot both seem to indicate that it's in the same direction, which is that in Bavel is a place that's in the valley, is a place that gets plenty of rain. So since it gets plenty of rain, therefore more rain or excessive rain is not good for them. They need limited rain in order to have things work out. On the other hand, in Eretz Yisrael, it's the opposite way around. In Eretz Yisrael, they're on the mountains, it's a dry climate, and therefore they need the rain, and so there more rain, and limited rain would be problematic, whereas plenty of rain will be good. So the difference between Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi and the Braisa is about whether you like the easterly winds or the westerly winds. Right, because one of them brings rain and one of them brings dryness or less rain. So if you're in Bavel, you want the wind that brings the limited amount of rain. On the other hand, if you are in Eretz Yisrael, you want the wind that brings the plentiful of rain. Now this will be subject to machlokes that the Rishbam and the Tosafot had before about what the easterly wind does. Is the easterly wind dry and brings the batzoret? So then that would be good for Bavel, but not good for Eretz Yisrael, according to the Rishbam. Tosus, who says that the easterly wind brings excessive rain, right? So then for Eretz Yisrael, that would be good, but for Bavel, that would be negative. So that's it would be a difference between them, depending on what you think the easterly wind does. But their basic idea of what is good and what is bad comes from the fact that Eretz Yisrael needs rain, and Bavel did not need as much rain. Tanya, Abba Shalom Omer Yom Tov Shel Atzeret Barur Siman Yafeh L'Chol HaShana Kula. Atzeret that has a clear day, it's a good Siman for the whole year round. So now, when you say, it would have been, the Rashbam before said Yom Tov Shel Atzeret is referring to Shavuot, right? Because on Shavuot, Nidonim Al Ha, right, Chitim. So it makes sense that we're talking about that before. Although, right, it would make sense over here to say Yom Tov Shel Atzeret is referring to Shmini Atzeret, because they're Nidonim Alamayim, but it's also the end of the Yamim Noraim. It's also the end of Yashana Yom Kippur Shmini Atzeret. So it would make sense over here to say Yom Tov Shel Atzeret also refers to Shmini Atzeret, but that's not the case. In case here, it seems Yom Tov Shel Atzeret is referring to Shavuot. He says, that is Yafeh L'Chol HaShana Kula. Amar Rav Zvid, Ayom Makamo D'Rei Shato, the first day of the year, meaning Rosh Hashanah, first day of Rosh Hashanah, Ichamim Kula Shata Chamima. If it's hot or warm, the whole year will be warm. Ikarir Kula Shata Rikirir. If it's cool or cold, the whole year will be cool or cold. It's very similar to the Gemara and Erechin and other places that discusses about the Simanim on Rosh Hashanah. And what we have, the minhag today, not to sleep on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, all the things that we do on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, because whatever happens on the first day is a siman to the Shana Kula, is a indication of what the year will be. And here you see it in the Gemara, that whichever takes place on the first day of Rosh Hashanah has implications for the whole year. Slamay nafgamina. Okay, so if it's hot or cold, what does it make a difference if we know that from the first day of Rosh Hashanah? So the Gemara says, Latfilato shel Kohen Gadol. The tefillah of the Kohen Gadol, when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right, he has to know whether to say, daven that this year will be Gushuma, or whether he should say it should be Shchuna, it should be drier. Well, if it's going to be a very hot year, they're going to need more Geshem. If it's going to be a cool year, then they'll need less Geshem. So he'll know what to say when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rav Amar Rav Nachman, Matnat Shkimira, Midarabanon, Ba'almahi, Shema Titaref, Dato Alav. So this is what we've known about Matnat Shkimira until now, that it's all Din Darabanon. What's the din Rabbanon? Shema titarif the tolav. Maybe he will be uncomfortable. So now the Rishbam brings two interpretations. He says one interpretation of what it means to shema titarif the tolav is that he'll want to give a gift. But before he has the chance to give the gift, he's gonna, you know, his mind, he's gonna lose his presence, and he won't be able to complete the gift. And then he'll pass away. So Rashbam says, and so what? I mean, if he wants to give the gift, and he doesn't consummate the kinyan, and that's what we're worried about here, so we're gonna say that his matnash kemer works because we're afraid he won't be able to consummate the kinyan. Alright, so he doesn't consummate the kinyan, there won't be a gift, and that's fine. What's wrong with that? That can't be the reason. The Rishbam says the reason is Shemeti Tarif Tito is to give peace of mind to the grantor, to the one who's on his deathbed. He's about to die, and he wants peace of mind. He doesn't want to have to think about making kinyanim and not knowing. If he knows that all of his issues are settled and all of his everything's in place, he can pass away in peace. But also maybe he'll live a little bit longer because he's not so worried about this. If he's very worried about this, it's going to make him right upset. My cousin passed away earlier, but also he'll be leaving the world in a state that's not comfortable. So we want to say Shoshem Titarif Dato is that we want it to be easy for him to grant and to be mitzaveh beto, to give out his instructions, his last will and testament. We want it to be easy for him. So if it's easy for him, then he'll have less pain. It'll be less uncomfortable for him, and that's why we do it. Does Rav Nachman really believe this? So here is a question in the Girso. It's either going to be Vamar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, that's Rav Nachman saying the name of Shmuel, or Amar Rav Nachman, and he's making a statement about Shmuel, Afagav da Amar Shmuel. It's Machlok is in the Girso, whether it says Afagav or not. It seems from the Rishbam over here that it doesn't have the Girso Afagav, but Tosfos in other places seems to have the Girso Afagav. Amar Shmuel, Mocher Shtachol v'chavero, v'chazaru machalo machul. That if a person sells a shtar chov to his friend and then goes ahead and is mochelet, it works. The mechila works, even though he sold it. Va'afilu yoresh mochel. And even if the original creditor goes ahead and passes away, and then his son inherits all of his possessions, with that he also inherits the rights of mechila. And therefore, if he's mochel, it also wipes out the loan. Modesh Shmuel, nevertheless, Shmuel admits that it was granted, the loan was granted to someone else, the creditor granted his loan to someone else, that he's not able to be mochelet anymore. So, if you say, if you believe that matnat shchemira works minat Torah, that's why the mechila doesn't work. And if you think it's Rabbanon, why can't he do Mechila? So why, if he can't do Mechila,
what?
Right, Rav Nachman is a Talmud of Shmuel, very good. But also Rav Nachman himself, he's quoting Shmuel, he's saying, even though Shmuel said this, he believes this, which seems to indicate that he also, right, some way holds of that. But before we have Rav Nachman saying that Matnach Kimira is Midor Rabbanon, and all of a sudden he's here, he's establishing a principle of Matnach Kimira is Midor Raisa. Why? How does the Gemara know it's Doraisa? Because the Gemara believes the reason that you can be Mochel, the loan here, the creditor can be Mochel, the loan over here, is because the transaction to sell the loan is Midor Rabbanon. So this is subject to a Machlokas. We saw this earlier in the Masechta between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam and Rashi and other places about how does it work here? When you sell the loan, is the loan sold only Midor Abonon or only Midor Raisa? Those that say that the loan is only sold to Midor Abonon bring their Raya from here. The Raya is from this Gemara. This Gemara says that when you sell the loan, it only works Midor Abonon. How do I know it only works Midor Abonon? Because you can be Mochel. The fact that you can be Mochel is an indication that it's only a Din Midor Abonon. If it worked all right, so you wouldn't be able to be Mochel. And the fact that you can be Mochel and alone shows us that it's only a Din Midor Abonon. At the Tosafot there has to re-explain this Gemara. Rabbi Yonatan re-explains the Gemara to say that it even works d'oraisa, but nevertheless, you can be mochel. So that's the sugya that we dealt with earlier. Just nice to see it again. Just remind ourselves of that machloket. So Gemara says here, listen, if a matnash kumira works midoraisa, that's what prevents you from doing mechila over here. Whereas if matnash kumira was only midorabona, it would be at the same status as someone who sells his chov, as someone who inherits from his father the chov that was sold. So then, inherits the rights to be mochel, the loan that his father had sold. So Gemara says, no. Ain't a shalka Torah. is not min Torah, but the Chachamim gave it power like that of the Torah. So the Kinyan, or the way it works, is only a din derabonan. Nevertheless, why are you not allowed to be mechel over here? Because the Chachamim moved it up to a status of a doraisa. Even though it's only working midrabanan, they gave it tokef. They empowered it like a din doraisa, and therefore you cannot be mechel over here. Now, one who goes ahead and is mechel on a loan, so for instance, he sells a loan, Reuven's a creditor, and he sells the loan to Shimon. So when he sells the loan to Shimon now thinks he's going to collect the money from Levi, and he's happy. All of a sudden, Reuven says, you know what, Levi, don't worry about the loan. That loan that I gave to you, don't have to worry about it, it's mochel. Now, Shimon can't collect anything from Levi anymore, but he bought this shtar from Reuven. So when he bought the shtar from Reuven, he paid money for it. Now he's out that money. So Rashbam points out over here, that if you are dan din digarmi, if you go ahead and dan din digarmi, which is where you have direct causation of someone else to have a loss, then you must pay for it. And that's what the Rashbam says over here. That if you are mochel on the shtar, you have to compensate Shimon for the loss that you caused him. You, Reuven, the creditor, the original creditor, who sold it to Shimon and then was mochel to Levi, who was the debtor, then you'll have to compensate Shimon for the loss that you caused him because it's dinah dinah garmi. That's the Rashbam. The Rashbam says that because it's dinah dinah garmi, you must pay for it, so, and you'll have to return the monies to the buyer because you caused them a loss. Tosus over here points out that you don't have to return all the money to the shtar, the value of the shtar. You don't have to pay him back what he paid you. Because there's two possibilities of the loss that was caused over here. The Shimon, when he bought the document, the loan document from Reuven, he doesn't buy it for its face value. He buys it at a discount to its face value. So when he buys it, either because there's time left in the loan, whatever the reasons are that he wants to discount the value, or there's some risk in the collection of the loan. So whatever the reason is, he's going to pay a discount to its face value. So now when Reuven goes in as mochel on the loan, the loss that he causes him technically is that he can't collect the loan anymore. So that's the full face value of the loan is what he's causing the loss for. On the other hand, what Shimon is out is the money that he paid. That's it. That money is less than the face value of the loan. So what do you have to return? So the Re over here suggests the money that you have to give back, Ein tzarich lachzir lema'ot shenat no bo alukuchot v'lo kol ha'shtar. You only have to pay back that which you paid for it and not the whole shtar. So you have to compensate him for the loss of what the money that he laid out. You do not have to compensate him for the face value of the loan. Because that's the loss that you called him. That loss that you caused him was that he paid you money. And now you caused him loss, you return that money. But the face value of the document, that you will not have to pay for it. Alright, Amar Rav Nachman. Shchiv Meira Shamar. Shchiv Meira Zandep. It says, Yidor Ploni B'Bait Zeh. That this individual should live in this house. Yochal Ploni Perot Dek Elzeh. So and so should eat the fruits of this tree. Lo Amar Klum. He didn't say anything. Achiyomar, until he uses lashon of tnu bayit zeh leploni, give this house to so and so, v'yidorbo, and then he'll live in it. Tnu degel zeh leploni, give him this tree, yochal berutav, and he'll eat the fruits. Lememra. So this you see is another statement from Rav Nachman. Right, this is Rova quoting Rav Nachman. So it sounds like this: the Rav Nachman holds milta de ita bebori, ita b'shchemira. Only if a regular healthy individual could make such a kinyan, will a shchemira be able to do it? If you can't make a kinyan as a bari in this manner, you can't do it as a shchemira. Okay, obviously shchemira is different. Why? Because the amira of a shchemira is what generates the kinyan. So what he's saying over here, it's something like what we do by hekdesh. We say amirato lehekdesh kemesirato lehedjot. When you speak to hekdesh, it's equivalent of giving over a formal kinyan to a hedjot. So same thing over here. The shchemira, right, is able to create a kinyan that a bari can't create. What does that mean? He can create a kinyan that a bari can't create. He's able to create a kinyan through amira, which a bari can't do. A bari has to have some sort of formal kinyan. What do you mean? But if he has a formal kinyan, then a shchemira can replace whatever a bari could do with a formal kinyan, a shchemira could do through amira. But if a bari, if a healthy person couldn't do this, then the Shchemira can't, just because of his Amira, change the fact that you can't do this. What's the problem with go live in this house? If he says to them, go live in that house. It's Davar Sheinbo Mamash. It's an intangible item. You cannot make a kinyan on an intangible item. So since a healthy person can't acquire or distribute this type of an intangible item through a kinyan, then a Shchemira can't grant it through his amira, because his amira is only good as the kinyan that the bari himself could have created. That's one. Second thing is peirot dekel zera. What? Davar shelo bali olam. So since a bari cannot grant fruits in the future to someone, even through a kinyan, because it's davar shelo bali olam. Therefore, a shchimira, even though through a mira he could generate a kinyan, he could generate something that a bari could have done as a kinyan. Here, the bari can't do it because it's davar shelo bali olam. So since a healthy person can't do it, the shchimira himself also can't create the kinyan. So you must do is say, give the dekel, or the way, give the dekel to the individual, give the house. And then they can, because those are tangible items, and since they can make a kinyan on the tangible items, then it will work over here. Mar says, wait a minute. Amar Rav, Amar Rav Nachman, Shchimira, Shemar, Tznu halvati leploni, halvato leploni. If a Shchimira goes and says, give my loan to so-and-so, I mean, I'm a creditor, give the loan over to so-and-so, it works. Va'afagav to let it be bari. That doesn't work by a bari. Now, what's the case here? It's a milvel peh. It's an oral obligation. In that it was a loan that was done bal peh. And now, a bari can't do anything with this. He can't make a kinyan on it. There's nothing tangible to make a kinyan on it. There's nothing for the kinyan to be tofes on. It's all intangible because it's all an oral loan. So, by a shtar, if you have a milvel b'shtar, then you can be moser lo the shtar. That's what we had before, right? The, whether, no, the misira, or whether, you can sell the loan, you can do it maybe by mamaj l'shtan. The other possibility is that you can do it mamaj l'shtan and generate a kinyan that right functions. So since you have the ability to create a kinyan by shtar, therefore a shchimira can pass on a loan that's in a shtar. But what he can't do, as a creditor of an oral, you know, the debtor owes him an oral obligation, and there's no documentation of it, he can't pass that on. Why? Because the bari has no way of doing that. A healthy individual can't sell anything that is not tangible. And here the loan is not tangible, it's all intangible. Since it's all intangible, there's no way to sell it. Now the Tosos asked the question, a very good question over here. He says, listen, why can't he can be maknet al gav karka? He can do a kinyan agav. A kinyan agav will work in this case. So why not? Why can't they, if a bari can do it on a kinyan agav, why can't a shchimira do it over here? Since the individual can only do the kinyan through something else, that's not considered a kinyan. I mean, a shchimira can replicate a kinyan of a bari, but that's a kinyan where the kinyan itself is what generates the exchange. What a shchimira can't do is recreate a kinyan, which is a kinyan agav. Through a kinyan of something else, you can also enjoin this. That the shchimira can't do, because he can't replicate, can only replicate one kinyan. Can't replicate a kinyan that will also draw something else with it. So it says it has to be, we're trying to find something that a bari can do directly, and then you can do that, the shchimira can replace it. And he says the same thing by dirat bayit. Living in a house, or getting peirot dekel, through a bari, there is a way to do that. You know, there is a way to grant a gift like that. We said you can't grant the peirot because it's davar shelo bali olam. You can't give a kinyan on the living in the house because it's an intangible item. But there is a way to do that, and that is, the Gemara explains in other places, that you could say, ayudeya dekel, or ayudeya bayit. Which is that you can say like this. He'll give him a kinyan over the house to use the house, not to keep the house, not to get the principal ownership in the house, but that he should be able to live there for so many years. Right? Or he'll give him the dekel. I'll grant him you the dekel. So he's giving him something tangible to hold on to make the kinyan on for its fruits, not for the peirot itself. That works. But why can't a shchimira grant in that same manner? So the answer again to Tosus is that a shchimira's kinyan won't work there. Why? Because he can only do a kinyan that a bari could do himself, not ayidei davar acher. So here, a bari who is using a kinyan, ayidei davar acher, since he's doing something, he's doing it through the deco, he's getting the payroll, or through the house, he's granting him the living rights, that won't work, because that's a kinyan that utilizes a kinyan to get possession of something that's not in the kinyan. They're separated. The kinyan and the result of the kinyan are separated. The maaseh kinyan generates a utility or an ownership somewhere else. And that won't help you when it comes to matnas shchimira. The only type of matnas shchimira works where it would work by a bari is like mechira, selling, or a kinyan chalipin, where the kinyan itself, the maaseh kinyan generates, right, the ownership itself that you want. And that, where shchimira can replicate it. The last thing to suggest is how come by a bari can use hodah, he can use admission to grant things, right? A principle anywhere else. Hodat badin kamei idim dami. So if you say someone owns something, you can grant them that ownership. even though technically there's no kinyan here, just your admission of their kinyan would be enough. So why can't a shchemira use the same method? By granting that he admits that this belongs to so-and-so, why isn't that a good functioning kinyan? So Tosfos leaves his last principle here, which is that he has to do it derech matana. That shchemira, the definition of shchemira is matnat shchemira. It has to be granted as a gift. So that is the limitations of the shchemira is that number one, he has to grant it as a gift. Number two is he can only replicate kinyanim that a bari could do, where the maaseh kinyan generates the ownership on the item itself that you're making the kinyan or the kinyan chalipin, right? Not on something where you have a kinyan agav, or you have a kinyan that takes a tangible item to get access to an intangible item. All of those are kinyanim that are, the maaseh kinyan is not directed towards the ownership of the object, but to something else. And all of those, the shchemira cannot replicate. So now the Gemara says, so over there, by halva, how come it works? If Rav Nachman's position is that only what works by a bari works by a shchemira, how come by halva it works? So Rav Amar, ho v'yoresh yorsha. Because since he would inherit it, therefore he can be, right, he can create the rights, or he can generate, those rights that are generated, he can exchange. What does that mean? That means that if it was an oral obligation, and he passes away, what's the din? The din is that that will go to his, right, would go to his yorshim. So now, since he is, as a matnat shchemira, functioning like Yerusha, that when he distributes the property, he's distributing it like a Morish. Therefore, also over here, he can grant or gift this oral loan, which would have functioned, would have worked by Yerusha. He can also do it through a matnat shchemira. By the way, it's another raya or another interesting thought, which we've spoken about before, that a Yoresh is not really koneh. He does not acquire the possessions from his father, but rather he steps into the shoes of his father and he takes over his father's position. And you see that over here, because even though a oral loan cannot be passed down with a kinyan, so therefore, if you as a Yoresh got acquired things, then you wouldn't be able to get this intangible item. The fact that you do have the rights to collect on an oral loan indicates to you that you're not taking it through kinyan, but rather you're stepping into the father's shoes. By stepping into the father's shoes, he takes over. So that's what Gemara says here. Just like a yoresh functions that way, so too matnat shchemira functions that way. Rav Acha Brei Ravika Amar Halva Ita Bibori. You can move and have a kinyan on a halva, meaning milvel peh. That there is a way to move an oral loan, and what is that? Mamad shloshtam. Mamad shloshtam is a kinyan, right? It's milsa de lotaima that we saw earlier, right, in the Gemara. But there is a way to create kinyanim, even in areas where they wouldn't otherwise work. Over here it will work, which is mamad shloshtam. So since mamad shloshtam works by a bari, there if it works, so too by a matnat shchemira, he can replicate that which the bari has done. Okay, all right, we'll stop over here.